So I had an interesting conversation the other day, actually. I was picking my son up from his camp. And when we got there, there was a mom who had her car parked in the parking lot. And she took her baby out of the car. The baby's crying because the baby was clearly, you know, upset, was probably napping right before they picked up. And one of the moms in there said, I can't believe you don't just leave the baby in there. They're, you know, the car is right here up against the window. We could see them. You know, it just let the baby sleep. And I felt so bad for this mom because you could see she's like, well, I don't want to leave the car running because there are all these drive-by people taking your cars with babies inside. So that freaks me out. And she said, and I don't want to leave the car just not running because then the baby will overheat. And classic line, just roll down the window. Just roll down the window. And I have learned over the years of talking to people like Fran Mako that you cannot just roll down the window and call it a day. So far this year, 2023, 8 deaths have been reported for hot cars in America. On average, 38 children under the age of 15 die every year from heat stroke after being left in a hot car. So we are talking for summer safety today about leaving kids or pets in a hot car. Fran Mako is back with AAA to talk all about this. She joins us now. Hey, Fran, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Thank you. Thank you. I'm fine. You've done your homework, Melissa. You've done your homework.
I felt so bad for this mom the other day, Fran. I really did. So I have to be honest. I do miss the days being in the 90s where my mom would leave all 5 of us in the car and it was okay, but she left the car running and it would be right there while she was literally 2 feet away grabbing something and she could see us from the window. Like, I do miss those days. And we were always left in a cool car because she'd leave the car running. But you can't really do that now. So I will say, for myself, I have gotten 2 sets of keys for my car. And when I go to get like a shake or something at a local nutrition spot and the car is right there and Chase is 5, he doesn't want to get out of the car all the time, I will leave the car running and then I will lock the car from the outside with my 2nd pair of keys. I look like a crazy person, but I will not leave my kid in the car with the window rolled down. It's like my biggest fear. And I think you instilled that in me. I have to be honest.
I'm a lot older than you. So I'm of the ilk that you never, ever leave kids alone anywhere. That was instilled in me when I first had my daughter about 34 years ago. You know, it's a judgment call. It definitely is a problem on hot days. I mean, if you're right there, I suppose it's not a problem. But going into a store, I mean, you hear all these stories about people leave their kids in the car and going into a store, going shopping. That is probably a no-no. And I suspect, even though I think they're, I don't know if it's a state law. I don't think it's a state law, a municipal law maybe, leaving a kid under a certain age in a car.
I don't know if it is. I'd have to ask.
You feel they're old enough, it may be an issue.
I'd have to ask.
I think in Milford it is.
Oh, is it? I was going to say, because I know I might be breaking a law. I know when my mom used to leave us, I mean, my brother, gosh, there's an 11-year difference between the last and the first. So my brother had to be 11, 12 years old. So there was always like a kid that was a preteen, if you will, in the car. But I know Chase is 5. And a lot of times if I have to run in, let's just say, to go grab, like there's this one shop I love in Milford. I've talked about it before where they've got these nutritional teas. And literally the car is parked there. There's a massive window. I literally walk 5 steps and I grab it from the front counter. I order it ahead of time, but he doesn't want to get out of the car. So I will leave the car running. And when I say it's like maybe 45 seconds, it's maybe 45 seconds and I can see him. And I have my 2nd pair of keys to lock the car from the outside. Yeah. But I don't know if that is a law, then yes, I'm breaking it and I'm admitting it on a radio show. So that's not good. So I should look into that and see if that's actually breaking the law.
Well, when my daughter was growing up, I had called the Milford Police Department and I said, is this a problem for folks, for me, for you? Should I not? My child is 10 years old. She doesn't want to come into the store. I feel that she's old enough to be by herself. And the police officer on the desk said, no, you shouldn't leave a child under 12 13.
I'm reading it here. That's what I'm trying to see.
I don't know if it's a judgment call. I mean, police officers have a certain amount of leeway, and it may have been his personal choice. So I don't, you know, again, it's a judgment call on the part of the parent.
I don't know if there's a I'm looking it up right now to see. I know there's something that dates back to 1997, but that's if you leave unsupervised minors in casino. I'm not seeing anything, but I'd have to look into that. I will definitely look and see if there is a law on the books for that, because I think in general, I know I'm not alone in doing that. I actually got the idea of getting the second pair of keys from another parent who does that. And so I know other people do this. I just am not sure. If there is something on this. But regardless of that, Fran, I want to get into the nitty gritty, obviously, of the importance of why just rolling down the windows, for example, is never going to suffice. You know, can you give us an idea of how hot those cars get, even with the windows rolled down?
Well, when outside temps are about 90 degrees, inside the car can rise to about 170 degrees. And even if it's a comfy 75 degrees outside, the inside of a closed vehicle, just after 10 minutes, could hit 94 degrees on a sunny day, and after 20 minutes, could hit way over 100 degrees. And that's deadly if a child is asleep or a pet is in the car. And what makes it deadly is that it causes heat stroke or hyperthermia. Not hypo, hyperthermia.
What's the difference?
Children.
What's
and
hyperthermia?
Of course, animals, too. Because the bodies of children tend to heat up a heck of a lot faster than adults.
Is that, what is hyperthermia? I've only heard of hypo.
Hyperthermia occurs when your internal body temps reach over 100 degrees and you overheat, and heat overwhelms your internal body organs. Hypo is when during the winter when you start to get very, very cold.
Got it. So that same effect you get when you have like a fever.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
And, you know, we hear these stories periodically. Somebody, you know, left their infant child in the car when they went shopping, or even worse, I mean, I keep going back to that terrible, terrible tragedy up in Ridgefield where the dad, who was not the primary, I don't want to say caretaker, but didn't
regularly drop the kid off at daycare. Yeah, that was such a sad story.
And he forgot all about the baby. You know, and I hear over the radio waves the proverbial eye roll on the part of people and say, how can you forget your child?
It's actually very easy. I mean,
I've done it.
We've all done it. I'm sorry. But I think if people are being real, especially if you're out of routine, I've told this story many times, and I know my husband gets very embarrassed, but I'm like, listen, you're helping the cause here, sweetheart. There have been times where I would, when Chase was a baby, and I would drop him off at my mom's for the day, or he would drop him off, rather. And if I had like a work event I had to go to, and I'd say, hey, just a reminder, when you leave work, you got to pick up Chase. I don't have time to go and get him today. He would come home. I'd be like, where's the baby?
Yeah.
And he'd be like, oh my gosh, I was supposed to get him from your mom's.
Yeah.
Because he never did the pickup. He always did the drop off. And I mean, he'd have to go all the way back to Fairfield and go pick up Chase. It's actually very common for people who are in routine to still take that left turn out of a driveway, even though they've moved and you're supposed to take a right now. Like, we become very creature of habit, if you will. And so
that's true.
Can't do the eye roll. I'm sorry. You can't do the eye roll. Not for everybody.
There is this very scientific explanation about this, and I had to pull it off, you know, some websites because I can't remember exactly why this happens. But you primarily have a lapse of memory, and there are these neurocognitive psychologists that have studied this, and they explain that sometimes when you're a caring, competent parent, you just simply forget what's so important. And because you have memory lapses, and they say there are two types of memory systems in our brain. One is called prospective memory, because I'm reading this because I certainly can't remember it. prospective memory, which involves the intent to remember to complete tasks outside your ordinary routine. Okay, then there's a second called habit memory, which basically your mind is on autopilot. And when prospective memory fails, and when prospective memory is what fails, and when this happens, habit memory is supposed to take over, and you'll just go about your daily business on a normal day. So that's how you forget. It's similar to rushing to work. You have your cup of coffee, you put it on top of your car, and then you get in your car and you drive away.
We all have done that, too.
Fran, oh, yeah.
I just told my producer, Chris Williams, that if I am not working here in the morning or for the rest of the week, it's because I've been arrested. I just talked to retired Lieutenant Jim Perez of Crime on the Mind. You all know Jimmy. And I said to him, hey, Jimmy, real quick, because I'm doing this interview with Fran Mako, do you know if there's a Connecticut law about leaving your kids in the car? He said, oh, yeah. Good thing you got cops who are friends of yours. Okay. Connecticut statute 5321 does not allow for a parent to leave a child unsupervised in a car or a public place under the age of 12. So anyone 11 and under are not allowed to be left in the car alone. So there you go. So I am clearly a lawbreaker, and I am working on that. And I will be throwing out my spare key literally as soon as I can get over to my my purse and go throw it out. So Fran Mako, for anyone who falls under my category and maybe has been somewhat breaking the law, even though, again, I want to just reiterate to people, I'm not a negligent parent. OK, I'm not. I kept the car running. I would be out for about 30 seconds. I literally would be watching him. I would order ahead of time. But anyways, regardless, it's a problem. So can't do that. But we're talking about hot cars and leaving kids or pets in those cars. And why even just rolling down the window, you know, regardless of what the law is, just rolling down the window does not mean that you are giving your kid the air that they need. And you know, we just heard it actually a couple minutes ago from Paul Pioric that it's hot out there. So, you know, Fran, speak to the, if you don't mind, speak to the idea of even though you roll down the window, it doesn't mean you're getting like the breeze you need to cool down or anything like that. There's just this insane misconception that that does the trick.
It was funny when he was reporting the weather, I'm thinking, this is it. This is the situation. You know, people with today's temperatures, and it's very humid out, people just should not leave their kids in the car. Mm-hmm. And it's a habit that you have to develop. You have to, and sometimes, again, it's very hard if you are not the primary caregiver. But, you know, anything could go wrong, whether it's a child or even a pet. You know, a lot of people see pets in cars with the windows cracked down or cracked open or even the window down. I mean, cars do get very, very hot, mm-hmm. very, very quickly on days like today. It's just something that you have to remember as a parent, and sometimes it's very hard, especially if you're stressed, if you lack the sleep that you haven't been getting because, you know, the baby's always up. These are just some things that go with parenting that you definitely have to remember, and sometimes it's very hard.
The other thing too, Fran, I know you have talked about this. We've had Senator Blumenthal on about this. If you especially are someone in routine, but you know that day you're going to be changing things up, or you know you're tired, or you know you're just off, you know, from yourself, what are some ways that you can remember? This probably sounds silly to some people going, oh, it's never going to be me. I can't believe we even talk about this. But what are some ways that you can remind yourself that you do have a kid, maybe even sleeping in the back of your car, that it's been an hour-long drive and you just have lapse of judgment?
See, let me just digress a little.
Yeah.
When people have kids in the cars and they're infants, they're in rear-facing car seats.
Right.
So that's a problem a lot of times. I mean, if the child is forward-facing, you get out of the car, you can definitely see the child. But with a rear-facing seat, and they're so big nowadays, that's one reason why you can't see the child and you forget. So there are suggestions to put your briefcase in the back or your purse in the back, which is probably a good idea if you have your cell phone. You know, something that you need when you get out of the car to go into the back seat of the car as a reminder. And a lot of cars have a lot of new gadgets in it to remind parents. Like on my car, it comes up on my dash, check the rear seat, check the rear seat. Now, I have nothing to check anymore, so I kind of disregard that. And that may be a problem for many people, because after you see these flashing lights, you tend to disregard them. So you really need to pay attention. But there are a lot of cars now equipped with technology to detect the presence of an occupant in the back when the engine is off. And a lot of them use sensors or radars. Some detect breathing, somebody breathing in the back. Other technology uses cameras. But a lot of the car manufacturers were resistant initially in the early part of the decade doing this because it's an expense, just an added expense. But slowly, they are incorporating all these gadgets in the car. And I know we talked about Senator Blumenthal. He's been very active trying to get, I think, the Hot Cars Act passed.
Yes, where it changes the, like, that there are, like, warnings on the dashboard and stuff. And yeah. Mm-hmm. He's been working on that for a while, though,
Yeah, and he'd be a good person to talk to about that. But, I mean, every summer, you know, we try to make parents, grandparents. I mean, that's a great example. You don't normally take your kid, the grandkids, in the car, and you could potentially forget that they're there, especially if they're an infant.
Yeah, it's so true, and it's something to think about even when your kids fall asleep and you don't want to wake a sleeping baby, obviously, but you park in the garage. It doesn't mean just because you're in the garage that it's okay to leave the doors open and all that either. I mean, you got to get those kids out of the car. You really, really do. And Fran Mako, I really appreciate you coming on a second time in 1 week. I really appreciate it. I know how busy you are, but such great information, and I clearly learned something or two new. And I will not continue to be a repeat offender. I didn't know I was such a bad mom. God, I had no idea, but now I know.
Now you're going to guilt yourself.
Oh, you know, I already, Perez is like, will you stop? Will
so
you relax?
Guilt. Have
oh.
so much guilt.
Just add it to
we've
the book.
We've all done it, parents out there. We've all done it.
I know. What is that book? Is it Tuesdays with Maury, where like in the very beginning of the book, he's like, you're going to mess up your kid 100 times before the end of like their lifetimes or something. And it's like, oh my gosh, I think before my kid even goes to kindergarten, I've already messed him up 100 times. But I won't be a repeat offender anymore, I swear. I promise you.
You do the best you can.
We're doing the best we can. Good Lord. I said to Perez, I was like, please don't arrest me at least until 10 o'clock. I have to get through this show. I really do. Fran, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And we will talk again very soon. Enjoy the holiday.
You too. Take care.
All right, Fran Mako of AAA here on WICC. Earlier this hour, we talked to Fran Mako of AAA about the dangers of leaving a kid or a pet in a hot car. And she shared that on average, it could be in the well 90s, the feeling of a temperature of 90 degrees in your car, even with the windows down on a hot day. And so I'm thinking I'm the smart, savvy parent. I would never leave my child in a hot car. I would never do it. I won't even leave the windows down because I'm too smart to know that you don't do that. But I find out that it is actually against the law here in Connecticut to leave your child in an air-conditioned car, even with the doors locked, and go into a storefront where you're looking through a window still and see them. It is still against the law. And we found out why. So we have, of course, retired Lieutenant Jim Perez, who quickly texted me. And I was talking to him while I was on my segment with Fran. And I immediately felt just mom guilt to the extreme. Luckily, Jim is here right now to tell me that I'm not so weird. There are a lot of people who have done this before. I could guarantee you, though, Jim, I will never, ever do this again, not just because it's breaking the law, but for some things that you and I were talking about before. Jim Perez is here from Crime on the Mind to kind of talk to us about why this law is in place, that any child under the age of 12 should never be left in a car in public by themselves, even with the air conditioning on in a locked car. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Hi, good. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. So why is the law in place? Why do I feel horrible?
Because people, listen, they treat their cars sometimes like their home. They think that because they lock it, that they're safe. But what they don't realize, number one, you're on public property. There are people, all kinds of people that are walking around, some of them good, some of them not so good. And unfortunately, you're only separated by a quarter inch of glass. So quarter inch of glass broken and your child can be taken, the car can be taken, especially if the car is running. So I think that, there is a law that specifically deals with this, and I guess it's because this has happened over and over again, but leaving a child unsupervised in a place of public accommodation or motor vehicle is against the law. And it's actually a Class A misdemeanor if you just leave the child in the car, but it could be a Class D misdemeanor if you park in front of a liquor store, and it could be a C misdemeanor, which is even worse, if you leave them between the hours of 8 o'clock at night and 6 o'clock in the morning in that locked car in public.
Okay, so I've never done any of those. I can honestly say I've never done any of those. I can tell you that I have left Chase in a car with it locked and the air conditioning on in front of a Shake Shop that I go to very often where I am five steps away and I could see him through a window clearly and I'm at the cash register. I order ahead of time and I go and pick it up. I pay for it and I get back in the car 45 seconds later. That I have done. Yeah. I will honestly admit that I've done that, but I will never do it again.
Understand that it takes less than 40 seconds. It takes literally seconds for someone to break a car window, especially with tools that are out there are readily available for anyone to purchase, and be able to grab your child immediately for whatever reason, whether it's human trafficking or it's the resale of a child or it's just someone who's sick. This can and will happen. And I think that people need to understand that you need to treat your car a little bit more with a little bit more security awareness and understand that they even go after property. People will literally break a car to go after gifts during the holiday. People will break into a car when they see a laptop in there. So how much more valuable would a human be and how much more risk, of course, it takes, but people will do it. So I think it's very important that everyone that's listening understands that leaving a child in a car for no matter, even if it's for 10 seconds and even if you're 15 feet away, is completely unacceptable. It's against Connecticut law, and they can be held and will be held because people will always call the police when they see a child in a car or an animal in a car, and the police will respond. And because the police are responding, they're going to take appropriate action, which is going to be against that parent. And again, it could be a Class A misdemeanor if it's done just in general. If you park in front of a liquor store, it could be a Class D misdemeanor. And if you do it at night between the hours of 8 p.m. and 6 a.m., it can be considered a Class C felony. So people need to understand that the state takes this very seriously and that they will take action if this happens. And it's all really in protection of the child.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And again, like you just said, Jim, I think that it's probably very common and a lot of people do it and it could just take seconds. And I think, I could feel my heart stopping as you're talking and thinking to myself, wow, just when you think you're being like tech savvy and you're making it convenient for your kid and you're trying to get a million things done, it's like at the end of the day, no, there's literally, it is priceless if my child were to be taken from me or a car were to be taken and he's sitting in it. I would never forgive myself. So it's super important for people to know. And like I said, we were debating if this was even a law on the books, and it is. I appreciate you clarifying it. Really quick, Jim, before you go, I know you've got to go, but do you have any like recent examples of where something like this happened, where you feel like you're doing all the right things, but unfortunately things go in a bad direction just because of a matter of seconds?
Yeah, there was an incident years ago, and I'll never forget this, where in Orange, it was at a Stop and Shop, a mother pulled up to pick up her husband, and the two-year-old child was in the back seat. And unfortunately, this bad guy comes up, literally carjacks the car with the mother and the child in it, takes them to Fairfield in the woods somewhere, and then did some not-so-nice things. So that's an extreme example. But these things do happen, and you read across the country how children are constantly taken in a car. Sometimes accidental, the bad guy doesn't mean to do it, but they do it anyway. And so you have to guard against this. We're given the responsibility. Children cannot fend for themselves. And so we're given the awesome responsibility of being able to protect them and rear them up so that they can become productive human beings. And we can't do that unless we actually watch out for them. And unfortunately, the convenience of leaving them there because we want to just run in for a second is not an excuse, and the state will prosecute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Jim, I really appreciate it.
It is serious.
And I appreciate you sharing it and for coming on last minute this hour. But I felt it was really, really important. I know I started to really feel it in my gut. And I thought, you know, maybe other people feel the same way, that, you know, we can't just take it so lightly. It needs to really be looked at very seriously. So thank you. Thank you so much.
And more people do it than you think. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Have a great day.
Thanks, Jim.
Now, for a look at your news beyond Bridgeport, Melissa in the Morning takes you around the region on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
I want to welcome to the show Josh Morgan, who is here from the Connecticut Department of Transportation. Josh, welcome back. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. Great to be here. Thank you for having me back.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you here. And Josh is the spokesperson and communications manager for the DOT here in Connecticut. Josh, let's talk about the newly released active plan that was sent out earlier this week by the Connecticut Department of Transportation. What does that cover, and how was all the information gathered to determine what exactly needs changes or upgrades for our modes of transportation here in the state?
Yeah, it's called the Customer Experience Action Plan. It's actually a new unit we built out here at the DOT, really focused on transit riders' priorities, and not us or transit providers telling customers what they want to hear or what they think they need. It was actually having more than 10,000 interactions with transit users, meeting them at bus stops, rail stations, transit hubs. We were at farmers markets and community events, even at a yard goats game, just talking to people about what they think of public transportation in Connecticut, if they use it, what they like and what they think could be better. If they aren't using it, why not? And what would help them get into public transportation? And that's actually what we use, that direct feedback, those direct conversations to build out our first ever action plan.
And what were some of the biggest findings from the surveys you took from people around the state?
Yeah, no matter who we spoke to, whether it was in an urban or a rural community, you know, they wanted to see transit easier to use. They wanted to see it more comfortable, more accessible, and they wanted services that better serve them. So things like running buses later during the day or additional services on Sundays. So things that we were able to build into the plan, some things that we've actually already have been able to accomplish because this has been going on for a year. So we were able to put some recommendations into the state budget. And there's some other things which are going to take a couple of years, like building new train stations and improving bus stop shelters around the state of Connecticut. So some stuff we were able to get done pretty quickly. Other things are going to take a few years to get done.
Another thing, too, this plan looks like it's really bolstering up our bus and rail, which includes faster service and newer technology to improve user experience. Can you talk about some of the new technology? I heard something about Wi-Fi improving for our trains, which is something that commuters have wanted for a very long time.
Yeah, we're in the midst of a study about what that connectivity would look like. We know that there's some dead spots along the lines. You know, is it putting Wi-Fi on board the trains for people to use, similar to what maybe someone who has ridden on an Amtrak set may have experienced? Is it putting, you know, 5G repeaters along the rail right away? You know, it may not be the Wi-Fi that maybe someone is used to at their home or at their business, you know, but trying to come up with a solution that will allow laptops, phones, smart devices to connect so people could, you know, watch videos, do work, you know, stay connected while they're on that rail service. So that's something that we're working on and hopefully we'll be implementing soon.
So we're talking to Josh Morgan, who is with the Connecticut Department of Transportation. Josh, I'm going to address, though, the elephant in the room, which is that we are still anticipating major cuts to Shoreline East and Metro North rail service, correct?
Yeah, the budget that was adopted this year does include some service reductions to the New Haven line for the upcoming fiscal year. And then it does have reductions on the Shoreline East service side for the next two fiscal years, Shoreline East going to 44% service levels. But ridership on that line is still not recovering post-pandemic, where other lines have rebounded pretty strongly over the last couple of years. The ridership on Shoreline East is about 30% of what it was compared to pre-pandemic levels, where New Haven Line has some interesting stories to tell in terms of peak midweek ridership. The ridership on the trains is stronger Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays compared to Monday and Friday weekdays. Still hasn't really recovered as much as we'd hoped to have seen on weekends. And this is sort of our new reality that we're finding ourselves in post-pandemic, looking at commuting patterns, hybrid work schedules. That's what we're seeing, especially on the New Haven Line, where maybe folks who were in the office or going to the city 5 days a week in 2019 are now maybe going 2 or 3 days a week. So that's what we're seeing, that ridership is a lot less on Mondays and Fridays on the New Haven Line.
So, Josh, let's, if you don't mind, can we dive into this a little bit? Because I know there's a lot of controversy around this, but I personally do not use a train to commute in and out of the city. I don't really go into New York often enough, and when I do, there are plenty of trains on the weekends. So I'm not personally directly impacted by this, but I do know that many people in Connecticut are very upset by the fact that we are cutting rail service. So help me to understand this. When we say that we're not back to where we were pre-pandemic numbers, like, how significantly far off are we from where we were in 2019 versus where we are now in 2023 to need to cut rail service and obviously save money? That's what it comes down to, is saving money.
Yeah, it does. It does save money. So, you know, when we talk pre-pandemic ridership, we're looking at 2019 levels. So on the New Haven Line, you know, it's about 60 to 70% recovered, depending on the month and the day of the week. Looking at average passenger counts on the New Haven Line, there are usually about 135,000 people taking the train on a given day out of Connecticut. You know, that could be as low as 50,000 now,
really,
depending on the day. The numbers are actually startling when you look at a month over month, seeing that drop that happened when, you know, basically the country froze back in, you know, March, April, May 2020, when the pandemic first hit. Just, you know, services bottomed out on the rail lines, all rail lines in Connecticut. We reduced services back then, and then we started to put more trains back on as the pandemic wore on in 2021 and in 2022. And because more riders were coming back, there was a demand for that. You know, on the shoreline, you know, we're at 30% of that pre-pandemic level. So, you know, just a few thousand people are riding that rail line. The funding is there to support 44% service levels, which is over the amount of riders which are there. So we're working with Amtrak, who is the operator on the Shoreline East, working with Metro North, the operator on the New Haven Line, to come up with a schedule, some adjustments that we're going to present to the public this summer. There'll be public hearings and opportunity for public input, but we're working closely with those rail providers to see, you know, it's not just let's cut, you know, blatant trains across the board, trying to see how we come, you know, become creative with a new schedule adjustment that hopefully works for everybody.
We have Josh Morgan here from the Connecticut Department of Transportation, and we were just talking about some of the cuts coming to rail service, including Metro North. And some of the things, the concerns, I should say, Josh, as I'm sure you've heard from people who are worried about the cuts coming to the transit or to public transit, you know, like if you hear from Jim Cameron, for example, who is the president of the Commuter Action Group, he feels that, you know, by cutting Metro North, it means that people are essentially going to get away from mass transit. They're going to get back into their cars. And now we're kind of chasing our tails a little bit. Do you agree, or do you, you know, look at the numbers and look at the statistics over the last 3 years and really say, you know, we're talking about a few thousand people who are just going to have to basically change the times that they get on their trains? Like, what is sort of your response to the concerns about the cuts for Metro North?
Yeah, I mean, you know, providing public transportation services is incredibly important in Connecticut. So the funding is there to provide rail services. It's not eliminating 100% of trains on any of the rail lines. There will be trains available for people to use. And again, when we're looking at schedule adjustments, it's not just saying we're going to remove XYZ train Monday through Friday, you know, we're actually working with Metro North and Amtrak to do something called load ratings. That's actually looking at the weight of the trains to give us a good idea of, you know, where the lightest trains are, which means the trains with the fewest amount of folks on them. Are there ways to come up with a creative schedule that doesn't just eliminate trains? You're looking at things that can happen on weekends or, you know, that Monday and Friday when there actually isn't that level of ridership because of hybrid work schedules. So, again, you know, coming up with a schedule, and, you know, we will certainly welcome public feedback when we have options to present over the summer. And these changes are probably going to go into effect later this fall in early October. So, you know, there is still opportunity for the public to comment and offer their feedback because it has been experienced here at the DOT. Sometimes the riders will say, hey, have you thought about this or have you considered this? And that gives us an opportunity to, you know, look back at and see what our plans are, too. So we certainly encourage and welcome that public feedback over the summer.
I was curious, Josh, I'm sure you saw this headline earlier this week as well, that New York gave the final approval for congestion pricing in Lower Manhattan, probably one of the most congested traffic areas in the entire country, let alone one of the most in the entire world. We're looking at 700,000 plus vehicles that go through that area on a daily basis on average. That's not even accounting for like holidays or anything like that. And I would imagine that would be, you know, while it's certainly a headache and it's really a huge problem, I would think, for truckers especially, I would think that is a good thing for people wanting to do mass transit. Then they're not going to want to drive through that area if it means that they're going to have to pay a toll every single time. What was sort of your reaction to that going into place for New York, and could it benefit Connecticut and getting people into mass transit?
Yeah, you know, what's happening in New York, you know, just to be clear, there's no congestion pricing here in Connecticut. You know, this would impact people going to Central Business District, mm-hmm. you know, driving their vehicles into certain areas of Manhattan. It's something to look at in terms of funding transportation. You know, this is, you know, at a sort of crossroads for the transportation industry when we look at funding for infrastructure projects. Historically, a lot of that revenue has come from taxes on petroleum products. We're not there yet in terms of being a fully electric society. The writing is on the wall that, you know, maybe the next generation or two will see the elimination of, you know, gasoline type vehicles, moving to hybrids, moving to fully electrics, but looking at ways that can fund infrastructure, transportation, and mass transit in the future is something to work on. So yeah, this is something that New York is rolling out. Unclear what, you know, impacts would be for a Connecticut commuter, but certainly would always encourage people to use mass transit to reduce traffic congestion and also help reduce carbon emissions when people are commuting.
I mean, do you anticipate, Josh, and maybe I'm kind of going out on a limb with this question, but do you anticipate because of this congestion pricing going into place for New York, and that will have a trickle-down effect for Connecticut residents who have to go in and out of there, especially Southern Connecticut, if they work in and out of New York. Do you think that Connecticut will have to go back to the table and see if maybe we do have to bring back any of the service that's been cut from Metro North and Shoreline East, or no?
I think it's too early to say.
Yeah.
Any of that.
Okay. Okay, that's fair. So, Josh, if anybody wants to see a full report from what came out of the action plan, is there like a website or anywhere where they can get a copy of that?
Yeah, it's on Transit CX, CX meaning customer experience. So transitcx.com. It's got the full 38-page report. And also we distilled it down to a one-pager, which I personally enjoy and keep printed out and pinned up in my office instead of the full document. And Melissa, just before we wrap, because I know you have to run, you know, I heard the traffic alert this morning about, you know, 95. State police are actually reporting that was a wrong-way driver that caused that crash. So, you know, if I could just remind the public to, you know, please drive sober each and every time you get behind the wheel, especially as we head into this holiday weekend. Use a ride share. Please designate a sober driver. There's far too many crashes, far too many fatalities happening on our roadway. So we need people to be safe this holiday weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. And unfortunately, Josh, as you know all too well as well, that we are in the what's called the 100 deadliest days of the summer for young drivers as well on the road. So certainly ahead of the 4th of July holiday weekend, but also in general, we are just in that season where everyone's out and about, people get distracted, and people think, you know, one or two drinks is not a big deal. I could still get behind the wheel. And that is really not the case. So I think it's a good heads up for people.
Yeah, absolutely not. Memorial Day to Labor Day, 100 deadliest days on the roadway. So, yeah, please drive sober, slow down, and, you know, put those phones away. Too much distracted driving out there, texting and driving, people watching videos, just, you know, really dangerous behavior. So we want to make sure that our roadways are safe for everybody.
I agree. Thank you for that, Josh. And thank you for taking the time to get up early and come on the show today. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to talking again soon. Have a great holiday with your family.
Thank you, Melissa. Always a pleasure. Take care now.
Thank you. You too. That's Josh Morgan with the Connecticut Department of Transportation here on WACC.